From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. Cities across the country are trying to strengthen and enrich their neighborhoods. Certainly, Sacramento has been focused on that goal. So we're focusing this hour on some of the intriguing conversations we've had about neighborhoods. Urban sociologist Dr. Jesus Hernandez sees neighborhoods as patients at a doctor's office. Some need triage, which is urgent care. And a doctor, he says, would look at the root of the problem. Dr. Hernandez is a consultant for JCH Research. He taught at UC Davis for many years and grew up in Oak Park. In the case of Sacramento, he thinks a history of segregation is at the root of many modern problems. I asked him in this conversation from 2018 about the ways that Mayor Daryl Steinberg has been approaching homelessness.
The homeless problem is a big problem, and it's an important issue. And I like the way they looked at a triage type of approach. My concern is that it's kind of narrow because it just deals with one small problem. And when we talk about triage, we need to broaden the scope. We have some neighborhoods that have been left behind for like decades and decades and decades, over, 50, 60 years. And they need that same approach. I like this segue to a medical model where we talk about the triage and getting in and seeing what the patient is experiencing. My concern is it probably doesn't go far enough. What if we treat our neighborhoods that have been left behind, our segregated neighborhoods, as patients? What would our diagnosis look like? This raises some important questions, like who is the patient that we're trying to treat with our triage model? And what illnesses are we actually trying to correct?
I'm going to add one to that, and that is the homeless person on the street or the neighborhood actually part of the root of the problem or simply the symptom that we see, the consequence that we see?
The homeless issue is actually part of a larger problem on how we plan for neighborhoods and who gets left behind and who gets included in our new economies, our smart growth and the next economy and all the things that we have in these large regional plans. This is what I refer to as a problem of misdiagnosis, is because we really just look at problems as they appear and kind of just take care of the symptoms without really drilling down and looking at the root causes of the problems.
So if our neighborhoods are a patient, then what we would want is some patient history.
Well, if we have the time, let's walk through this patient-doctor protocol.
Sure.
So you go in to the doctor, and the first thing we're going to see are the vital signs, right? How do you appear to the physician? And then patient history, and then we look at these systems in our body, like the respiratory and circulatory and nervous system, and then we come up with a diagnosis and a treatment plan. What would that look like if we dropped our neighborhoods through that scenario as the neighborhoods being a patient? And if we look at those vital signs, we see that these neighborhoods that are segregated in Sacramento have high poverty rates, high unemployment rates, low educational attainment, no access to public transit, high rates of pollution, no public space, high crimes, low rates of home ownership, lack of public infrastructure. And if we look at the access to medical care, they have lack of access to primary and health mental health services, no coordinated care. Safety is always an issue. The stress of living in those neighborhoods creates health problems, limited opportunities for physical activity, substance abuse treatment is not there. So that now you can start seeing what our patient appears to the doctor.
You're also speaking to why the conversation sounded so big in those first weeks after the Stephon Clark shooting.
Yes. And getting to that shooting, we see that that shooting actually happened in a specific location. And that specific location is part of that patient history. How did the neighborhood of Meadowview become concentrated with race and poverty? And if we look at our patient history, we can see that we have this history of segregation coming in Sacramento going back to the early 1900s. If we look at our current geography of race, we can see that it follows the pattern all the way from North Highlands down to Meadowview. Race and poverty are concentrated in these places. If we look at census data, it's very clear. So this history is one of a combination of race covenants, mortgage redlining, urban renewal, and realtor gatekeeping. the core of this is the racial covenants that we have in Sacramento. And in fact, read just an excerpt of one of those covenants so people understand what they are. It's a deed restriction on our property. And it says, no persons of any race other than a Caucasian race shall use or occupy any building or any lot, which excluded people of color from living in certain places in town. And we still see that today. And you will see that they go from these covenants go from the west side of the county all the way up to Folsom, Granite Bay, and all parts in between, basically following the river.
Now that we're talking a little bit about geography, that helps me lead into a way that you describe the city, which is with a big letter X.
Yes.
And how the lines of that X actually point to the divisions that you're addressing.
So this X, we can see all the way from North Highlands all the way down to Meadowview, is a pattern of poverty, concentrations of minority populations, lack of a public investment. And going to east to west, you see these patterns of prosperity and opportunity, public infrastructure, it's where we keep our schools open, things of that sort. So it's basically in the shape of pattern of an X. And from this X, you can take any social ill and measure it by that X. Who drops out of high school, where your gang activity is, who doesn't have health insurance, where your subprime lending is, where your foreclosures are, just about anything you can measure by this X.
You participated, actually guided an episode of the KCET program, City Rising, and you talked about, among other things, value and race, meaning property value and race becoming linked. Would you expand on that in light of the description of the X, and when did that happen?
So back in the 1930s, as a way to come out of the Great Depression, we have the FHA, Federal Home Administration, come in on board to come up with a new way to look at mortgages, to amortize them over 30 years. Part of the problem was that a condition of getting those loans was to have race covenants on these properties. So FHA financing, the key to getting people into homeownership and the key to spurring construction, was basically limited upon the color of your skin. And so when we start that, you begin to have this stigma that arises where only certain people are allowed to live in neighborhoods. And the appraisal process kind of reinforced that because it looked for which neighborhoods were actually racially integrated. And those racially integrated neighborhoods have a reduced value on their property. The lower the value, the higher risk for FHA to insure. And so now you get this notion that value of your property is contingent upon the color of your skin.
In times before where people were divided by race in what drinking fountain they could use or where they could sit on the bus or which bathroom they could use, those signs eventually went away. There's discussion today about the language and the existence of these covenants. To some degree, whether we ignore them or not, in many cases, they're still on the books. What about that?
Even though they're not legally in effect, they created social norms that remain in effect. So when we talk about Sacramento, the article in Time magazine a few years ago that said Sacramento is the most diverse city in the nation, well, it didn't look at any of this. Because we see that we can look in places like Land Park and Curtis Park and East Sacramento and Carmichael and Folsom. We can see that these places are not racially integrated. And this notion of linking race to value created this stigma that whenever we talk about investment, it still stays there with us. If we look at public investment dollars across the region, we can see that there's a racial pattern to these public investments when where they go. And this is part of the pattern that's still with us today. One of the mistakes we make when we talk about neighborhoods is we go to those people in those neighborhoods and we look at them as the problem. We say, well, how could we cure you? Race and poverty are not created by the people in the neighborhood, but directly created by public policy. And the FHA lending patterns and the race covenants and things of this sort and redevelopment and booting everybody out of downtown, those are specific examples of how public policy perpetuates racial patterns.
As we look to the future then, and the patient, as we've been describing the patient, being the neighborhoods that are in distress, how do we figure out the smartest moves and the best allocation of resources to get some resolution?
I think the first step here is finishing that diagnosis. What are the systems for our neighborhood, our patient as the neighborhood?
Okay.
Those systems look like education, employment, healthcare, housing, wealth accumulation opportunities, and the infrastructure that binds them all together: roads, transportation, parks, environmental stewardship, economic opportunity, energy. All of this needs to be looked at before we can start talking about solutions. And because we don't look at the neighborhood as an important unit of analysis, we miss all of this. And we don't come up with solutions at work. Instead, we work at solutions that are silo-driven. I call this the plantation approach to neighborhood revitalization. It comes from above and down, and we give you options based upon what we can do rather than what you need.
Whose job is it to be looking at all of this? How much is it a city council member's job?
Well, I think it's a huge part of what their responsibility is. The thing is when we're looking at patients, do they have the same public protections that any other patient has in any other neighborhood? We don't see people in Folsom needing community engagement opportunities, right? They don't need to be empowered. Why do all of these poor people all of a sudden need to be empowered? When we pay taxes, we should be expecting a bundle of goods that comes with those taxes. Equal opportunity for education. Schools in South Sac should have STEM programs just like schools in Folsom and in Roseville and other places. When we're looking at neighborhood assessments, we don't do a Title VI assessment. Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. Mm. Everything must be distributed equally.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need this disparate impact assessment, because when we understand what the problem is, it's a problem of disparate impact. One group sharing more benefits more than another group, disproportionately. Okay. And when we don't realize that, and we don't want to acknowledge that, we won't get at solutions.
In a moment, you'll hear more of this conversation with Dr. Jesus Hernandez. It's from 2018. You're listening to an encore episode of Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio.